That, and you've got a great ass, sir. My point is, we flew together for 4 years and more, and I would have come along with you any day of that if you'd asked me. I didn't know, Holden said. He sounded a little strangled. You didn't ask. You always had your sights set someplace else. And honestly, I think Belter women just put you off. Until the cant. Until it was just the five of us. I've seen you looking at me. I know exactly what those looks mean because I spent 4 years on the other side of them. But I only got your attention when I was the only female on board. And that's not good enough for me. I don't know. No, sir, you don't. That's my point. I've watched you seduce a lot of women, and I know how you do it. You get fixed on her. You get excited by her. Then you convince yourself that the two of you have some kind of special connection, and by the time you believe it, she usually thinks it's true too. And then you sleep together for a while, and the connection gets a little faded. One or the other of you says something like professional or appropriate boundaries, or starts worrying what the crew will think, and the whole thing slides away. Afterwards, they still like you, all of them. You do it all so well, they don't even feel like they get to hate you for it. That's not true. It is. And until you figure out that you don't have to love everyone you bed down with, I'm never going to know whether you love me or just want to bed down. And I won't sleep with you until you know which it is. The smart money isn't on love. I was just, if you want to sleep with me, Naomi said, be honest. Respect me enough for that, okay? Miller coughed. He hadn't meant to. Hadn't even been aware he was going to. His belly went tight. His throat clamped down, and he coughed wet and deep. Once he started, it was hard to stop. He sat up, eyes watering from the effort. Holden was lying back on his bed. Naomi sat on the next bed over, smiling like there had been nothing to overhear. Holden's monitors showed an elevated heart rate and blood pressure. Miller could only hope the poor bastard hadn't gotten an erection with the catheter still in. Hey, detective, Naomi said. How you feeling? Miller nodded. I felt worse, he said. Then, a moment later, no, I haven't. But I'm all right. How bad was it? You're both dead, Naomi said. Seriously, we had to override the triage filters on both of you more than once. The expert system kept clicking you over into hospice care and shooting you full of morphine. She said it lightly, but he believed her. He tried to sit up. His body still felt terribly heavy, but he didn't know if it was from weakness or the ship thrust. Holden was quiet, jaw clamped tight. Miller pretended not to notice. Long-term estimates? You're both going to need to be checked for new cancers every month for the rest of your lives. The captain has a new implant where his thyroid used to be, since his real one was pretty much cooked down. We had to take out about a foot and a half of your small bowel that wouldn't stop bleeding. You're both going to bruise easy for a while, and if you wanted kids, I hope you have some sperm in a bank someplace, because all your little soldiers have two heads now. Miller chuckled. His monitors blinked into alarm mode and then back out. You sound like you trained as a med tech, he said. Nope, engineer. But I've been reading the printouts every day, so I've got the lingo down. I wish Shed was still here, she said, and sounded sad for the first time. That was the second time someone had mentioned Shed. There was a story there, but Miller let it drop. Hair going to fall out? He asked. Maybe, Naomi said. The system shot you full of the drugs that are supposed to stop that, but if the follicles die, they die. Well, good thing I've still got my hat. What about Eros? Naomi's false light tone failed her. It's dead, Holden said from his bed, turning to look at Miller. I think we were the last ship out. The station isn't answering calls, and all the automatic systems have it in a quarantine lockdown. Rescue ships? Miller asked and coughed again. His throat was still sore. Not going to happen, Naomi said. There were 1.5 million people on station. No one has the resources to put into that kind of rescue op. After all, Holden said, there's a war on. The ship system dimmed the lights for night. Miller lay on his bed. The expert system had shifted his treatment regimen into a new phase, and for the past 3 hours he'd alternated between spiking fevers and teeth-chattering chills. His teeth and the nail beds of his fingers and toes ached. Sleep wasn't an option, so he lay in the gloom and tried to pull himself together. He wondered what his old partners would have made of his behavior on Eros. Havelock. Muss. He tried to imagine them in his place. He'd killed people. And he'd done it cold. Eros had been a kill box. And when the people in charge of the law wanted you dead, the law didn't apply anymore. And some of the dead assholes had been the ones who killed Julie. So, revenge killing. Was he really down to revenge killing? That was a sad thought. He tried to imagine Julie sitting beside him the way Naomi had with Holden. It was like she'd been waiting for the invitation. Julie Mao, who he'd never really known. She raised a hand in greeting. "And what about us?" he asked her as he looked into her dark, unreal eyes. "Do I love you? Or do I just want to love you so bad I can't tell the difference?" "Hey, Miller," Holden said, and Julie vanished. "You awake?" "Yeah. Can't sleep." "Me either." They were silent for a moment. The expert system hummed. Miller's left arm itched under its cast as the tissue went through another round of forced regrowth. "You doing okay?" Miller asked. "Why wouldn't I be?" Holden said sharply. "You killed that guy," Miller said. "Back on the station. You shot him. I mean, I know you shot at guys before that, back at the hotel. But right at the end there, you actually hit somebody in the face." "Yeah, I did. You good with that?" "Sure," Holden said too quickly. The air recyclers hummed, and the blood pressure cuff on Miller's good arm squeezed him like a hand. Holden didn't speak, but when Miller squinted, he could see the elevated blood pressure and the uptick in brain activity. "They always made us take time off," Miller said. "What?" "When we shot someone. Whether they died or not, they always made us take a leave of absence. Turn in our weapon, go talk to the head shrinker." "Bureaucrats," Holden said. "They had a point," Miller said. "Shooting someone does something to you. Killing someone, that's even worse. Doesn't matter that they had it coming or you didn't have a choice. Or maybe a little difference, but it doesn't take it away. Seems like you got over it, though." "Maybe," Miller said. "Look, all that I said back there about how you kill someone, about how leaving them alive wasn't doing them any favors, I'm sorry that happened." "You think you were wrong?" "I wasn't, but I'm still sorry it happened." "Okay." "Jesus. Look, I'm saying it's good that it bothers you. It's good that you can't stop seeing it or hearing it. That part where it haunts you some, that's the way it's supposed to be." Holden was quiet for a moment. When he spoke again, his voice was gray as stone. "I've killed people before, you know. But they were blips in a radar track. It's not the same, is it?" Miller said. "No, it isn't," Holden replied. "Does this go away?" "Sometimes," Miller thought. "No," he said. "Not if you've still got a soul." "Okay, thanks." "One other thing?" "Yeah?" I know it's none of my business, but I really wouldn't let her put you off. So you don't understand sex and love and women. Just means you were born with a cock. And this girl, Naomi, she seems like she's worth putting a little effort into it, you know? Yeah, Holden said. Then, can we never talk about that again? Sure. The ship creaked, and gravity shifted a degree to Miller's right. Course correction. Nothing interesting. Miller closed his eyes and tried to will himself to sleep. His mind was full of dead men, and Julie, and love, and sex. There was something Holden had said about the war that was important, but he couldn't make the pieces fit. They kept changing. Miller sighed, shifted his weight so that he blocked one of his drainage tubes and had to shift back to stop the alarm. When the blood pressure cuff fired off again, it was Julie holding him, pulling herself so close her lips brushed his ear. His eyes opened, his mind seeing both the imaginary girl and the monitors that she would have blocked if she'd really been there. "I love you too," she said, "and I will take care of you." He smiled at seeing the numbers change, as his heart raced. Chapter 33. Holden. For 5 more days, Holden and Miller lay on their backs in sickbay, while the solar system burned down around them. The reports of Eros's death ran from massive ecological collapse brought about by war-related supply shortages, to covert Martian attack, to secret belt bioweapon laboratory accident. Analysis from the inner planets had it that the OPA and terrorists like them had finally shown how dangerous they could be to innocent civilian populations. The belt blamed Mars, or the maintenance crews of Eros, or the OPA for not stopping it. And then a group of Martian frigates blockaded Pallas. A revolt on Ganymede ended in 16 dead, and the new government of Ceres announced that all ships with Martian registry docked on station were being commandeered. The threats and accusations, all set to the constant human background noise of war drums, moved on. Eros had been a tragedy and a crime, but it was finished, and there were new dangers popping up in every corner of human space. Holden turned off his newsfeed, fidgeted in his bunk, and tried to wake Miller up by staring at him. It didn't work. The massive radiation exposure had failed to give him superpowers. Miller began to snore. Holden sat up, testing the gravity. Less than a quarter G. Alex wasn't in a hurry then. Naomi was giving him and Miller time to heal before they arrived at Julie's magical mystery asteroid. Shit. Naomi. The last few times she'd come into sick bay had been awkward. She never brought the subject of his failed romantic gesture back up, but he could feel a barrier between them now that filled him with regret. And every time she left the room, Miller would look away from him and sigh, which just made it worse. But he couldn't avoid her forever, no matter how much he felt like an idiot. He swung his feet off the edge of the bed and pressed down on the floor. His legs felt weak, but not rubbery. The soles of his feet hurt, but quite a bit less than nearly everything else on his body. He stood up, one hand still on the bed, and tested his balance. He wobbled, but remained upright. 2 steps reassured him that walking was possible in the light gravity. The IV tugged at his arm. He was down to just 1 bag of something a faint blue. He had no idea what it was, but after Naomi's description of how close to death he'd come, he figured it must be important. He pulled it off the wall hook and held it in his left hand. The room smelled like antiseptic and diarrhea. He was happy to be leaving.
"Where are you going?"
Miller asked, his voice groggy.
"Out."
Holden had the sudden visceral memory of being 15.
"Okay," Miller said,
then rolled onto his side. The sickbay hatch was 4 meters from the central ladder, and Holden covered the ground with a slow, careful shuffle, his paper booties making a whispery, scuffing sound on the fabric-covered metal floor. The ladder itself defeated him. Even though Ops was only 1 deck up, the 3-meter climb might as well have been 1,000. He pressed the button to call the lift, and a few seconds later the floor hatch slid open and the lift climbed through with an electric whine. Holden tried to hop on, but managed only a sort of slow-motion fall that ended with his clutching the ladder and kneeling on the lift platform. He stopped the lift, pulled himself upright, and started it again, then rode it up to the next deck in what he hoped was a less beaten and more captain-like pose.
"Jesus, Captain, you still look like shit," Amos said as the lift came to a stop.
The mechanic was sprawled across 2 chairs at the sensor stations and munching on what looked like a strip of leather.
"You keep saying that. Keeps being true."
"Amos, don't you have work to do?" Naomi said. She was sitting at one of the computer stations watching something flash by on the screen. She didn't look up when Holden came onto the deck. That was a bad sign.
"Nope, most boring ship I ever worked, boss. She don't break, she don't leak, she don't even have an annoying rattle to tighten down," Amos replied as he sucked down the last of his snack and smacked his lips.
"There's always mopping," Naomi said, then tapped out something on the screen in front of her. Amos looked from her to Holden and back again.
"Oh, that reminds me. I better get down to the engine room and look at that thing I've been meaning to look at," Amos said, and jumped to his feet. "Excuse me, Cap."
He squeezed past Holden, hopped on the lift, and rode it sternward. The deck hatch closed behind him.
"Hey," Holden said to Naomi once Amos was gone.
"Hey," she said without turning around. That wasn't good either. When she'd sent Amos away, he'd hoped she wanted to talk. It didn't look like it. Holden sighed and shuffled over to the chair next to her. He collapsed into it, his legs tingling like he'd run a kilometer instead of just walking 20-odd steps. Naomi had left her hair down, and it hid her face from him. Holden wanted to brush it back, but was afraid she'd snap his elbow with belter kung fu if he tried.
"Look, Naomi," he started, but she ignored him and hit a button on her panel.
He stopped when Fred's face appeared on the display in front of her.
"Is that Fred?" he said, because he couldn't think of anything even more idiotic to say.
"You should see this. Got it from Tycho a couple hours ago on the tight beam after I sent them an update on our status." Naomi tapped the play button and Fred's face sprang to life.
"Naomi, sounds like you guys have had a tough time of it. The air's full of chatter on the station shutdown and the supposed nuclear explosion. No one knows what to make of it. Keep us informed. In the meantime, we managed to hack open that data cube you left here. I don't think it'll help much, though. Looks like a bunch of sensor data from the Doniger, mostly EM stuff. We've tried looking for hidden messages, but my smartest people can't find anything. I'm passing the data along to you. Let me know if you find anything. Tycho out."
The screen went blank.
"What does the data look like?" Holden asked.
"It's just what the man said," Naomi said. "EM sensor data from the Doniger during the pursuit by the 6 ships and the battle itself. I've dug through raw stuff looking for anything hidden inside, but for the life of me I can't find a thing. I've even had the Rosie digging through the data for the last couple hours looking for patterns. She has really good software for that sort of thing. But so far, nothing."
She tapped on the screen again, and the raw data began spooling past faster than Holden could follow.
In a small window inside the larger screen, the Rosinante's pattern recognition software worked to find meaning. Holden watched it for a minute, but his eyes quickly unfocused.
"Lieutenant Kelly died for this data," he said. "He left the ship while his mates were still fighting. Marines don't do that unless it matters. Naomi shrugged and pointed at the screen with resignation. That's what was on his cube, she said. Maybe there's something steganographic, but I don't have another data set to compare it to. Holden began tapping on his thigh, his pain and romantic failures momentarily forgotten. So, let's say that this data is all that it is. There's nothing hidden. What would this information mean to the Martian Navy? Naomi leaned back in her chair and closed her eyes and thought, one finger twisting and untwisting a curl of hair by her temple. It's mostly EM data, so lots of engine signature stuff. Drive radiation is the best way to keep track of other ships. So that tells you where the ships were during the fight. Tactical data? Maybe, Holden said. Would that be important enough to send Kelly out with? Naomi took a deep breath and let it out slowly. I don't think so, she said. Me either. Something tapped at the edge of his conscious mind, asking to be let in. What was that thing with Amos all about? He said. Amos? Him showing up at the airlock with two guns when we arrived, he said. There was some trouble on our trip back to the ship. Trouble for who? Holden asked. Naomi actually smiled at that. Some bad men didn't want us to hack the lockdown on the Rossi. Amos talked it over with them. You didn't think it was because we were waiting for you, did you, sir? Was there a smile in her voice? A hint of coyness? Flirtation? He stopped himself from grinning. What did the Rossi say about the data when you ran it? Holden asked. Here, Naomi replied and hit something on her panel. The screen began displaying long lists of data and text. Lots of EM and light spectrum stuff, some leakage from damaged. Holden yelped. Naomi looked up at him. I'm such an idiot, Holden said. Granted. Elaborate? Holden touched the screen and began scrolling up and down through the data. He tapped one long list of numbers and letters and leaned back with a grin. There. That's it, he said. That's what? Hull structure isn't the only recognition metric. It's the most accurate, but it's also got the shortest range and... He gestured around him at the Rocinante. It's the easiest to fool. The next best method is drive signature. Can't mask your radiation and heat patterns. And they're easy to spot even from really far away. Holden turned on the screen next to his chair and pulled up the ship's friend-foe database, then linked it to the data on Naomi's screen. That's what this message is, Naomi. It's telling Mars who killed the Doniger by showing them what the drive signature was. Then why not just say so-and-so killed us? In a nice, easy-to-read text file? Naomi asked, a skeptical frown on her face. Holden leaned forward and paused, opened his mouth, then closed it and sat back again with a sigh. I don't know. A hatch banged open with a hydraulic whine. Then Naomi looked past Holden to the ladder and said, Miller's coming up. Holden turned to watch the detective finish the slow climb up from the sickbay deck. He looked like a plucked chicken, pink-gray skin stippled with goose flesh. His paper gown went poorly with the hat. There's a lift, Holden said. Wish I'd known that, Miller replied, then dragged himself up onto the ops deck with a gasp. We there yet? Trying to figure out a mystery, Holden said. I hate mysteries, Miller said, then hauled himself to his feet and made his way to a chair. Then solve this one for us. You find out who murdered someone. You can't arrest them yourself, so you send the information to your partner. But instead of just sending the perp's name, you send your partner all the clues. Why? Miller coughed and scratched his chin. His eyes were fixed on something. Like it was reading a screen Holden couldn't see. Because I don't trust myself. I want my partner to arrive at the same conclusion I did without my biasing him. I give him the dots, see what it looks like when he connects them.
Especially if guessing wrong has consequences, Naomi said.
You don't like to screw up a murder charge, Miller said with a nod. Looks unprofessional.
Holden's panel beeped at him.
Shit.
I know why they were careful, he said after reading his screen. The Rossi thinks those were standard light cruiser engines built by the Bush shipyards.
They were Earth ships? Naomi said.
But they weren't flying any colors and...
Son of a bitch.
It was the first time Holden had ever heard her yell, and he understood. If UNN Black Ops ships had killed the Doniger, then that meant Earth was behind the whole thing. Maybe even killing the Canterbury in the first place. It would mean that Martian warships were killing Belters for no reason. Belters like Naomi. Holden leaned forward and called up the comm display, then tapped out a general broadcast. Miller caught his breath.
That button you just pressed doesn't do what I think it does it? He said.
I finished Kelly's mission for him, Holden said.
I have no idea who the fuck Kelly is, Miller said, but please tell me that his mission wasn't broadcasting that data to the solar system at large.
People need to know what's going on, Holden said.
Yes, they do, but maybe we should actually know what the hell is going on before we tell them, Miller replied, all the weariness gone from his voice.
How gullible are you?
Hey, Holden said, but Miller got louder.
You found a Martian battery, right? So you told everyone in the solar system about it and started the single largest war in human history. Only turns out, the Martians maybe weren't the ones that left it there. Then a bunch of mystery ships kill the Doniger, which Mars blames on the Belt, only damn it, the Belt didn't even know it was capable of killing a Martian battlecruiser.
Holden opened his mouth, but Miller grabbed a bulb of coffee Amos had left behind on the console and threw it at his head.
Let me finish. And now you find some data that implicates Earth. First thing you do is blab it to the universe so that Mars and the Belt drag Earth into this thing, making the largest war of all time even bigger. Are you seeing a pattern here?
Yes, Naomi said.
So, what do you think's going to happen? Miller said. This is how these people work. They made the Canterbury look like Mars. It wasn't. They made the Doniger look like the Belt. It wasn't. Now it looks like the whole damn thing's Earth. Follow the pattern. It probably isn't. You never, never put that kind of accusation out there until you know the score. You look, you listen, you're quiet for Christ's sakes, and when you know, then you can make your case.
The detective sat back, clearly exhausted. He was sweating. The deck was silent.
You done? Holden said.
Miller nodded, breathing heavily.
Think I might have strained something.
I haven't accused anyone of doing anything, Holden said. I'm not building a case. I just put the data out there. Now it's not a secret. They're doing something on Eros. They don't want it interrupted. With Mars and the Belt shooting at each other, everyone with the resources to help is busy elsewhere.
And you just dragged Earth into it, Miller said.
Maybe, Holden said.
But the killers did use ships that were built, at least in part, at Earth's orbital shipyards. Maybe someone will look into that. And that's the point. If everyone knows everything, nothing stays secret.
Yeah, well, Miller said. Holden ignored him.
Eventually someone will figure out the big picture. This kind of thing requires secrecy to function, so exposing all the secrets hurts them in the end. It's the only way this really permanently stops.
Miller sighed, nodded to himself, took off his hat and scratched his scalp.
I was just going to put him out an airlock, Miller said.
BA-83-402-4112 wasn't much of an asteroid. Barely 30 meters across, it had long ago been surveyed and found completely devoid of useful or valuable minerals. It existed in the registry only to warn ships not to run into it. Julie had left it tethered to wealth measured in the billions when she flew her small shuttle to Eros. Up close, the ship that had killed the Scopuli and stolen its crew looked like a shark. It was long and lean and utterly black, almost impossible to see against the backdrop of space with a naked eye. Its radar-deflecting curves gave it an aerodynamic look almost always lacking in space-going vessels. It made Holden's skin crawl, but it was beautiful.
"Motherfucker," Amos said under his breath as the crew clustered in the cockpit of the Rosinante to look at it.
"The Rosi doesn't even see it, Cap," Alex said. "I'm pouring LADAR into it, and all we see is a slightly warmer spot on the asteroid."
"Like Becca saw just before the Cant died," Naomi said.
"Her shuttle's been launched, so I'm guessing this is the right stealth ship someone left tied to a rock," Alex added. "Case there's more than one."
Holden tapped his fingers on the back of Alex's chair for a moment as he floated over the pilot's head.
"It's probably full of vomit zombies," Holden finally said.
"Want to go see?" said Miller.
"Oh yeah," Holden said.
Chapter 34. Miller. The environment suit was better than Miller was used to. He'd only done a couple walks outside during his years on Ceres, and the Star Helix equipment had been old back then. Thick corrugated joints, separable air supply unit, gloves that left his hands 30 degrees colder than the rest of his body. The Rosinante suits were military and recent, no bulkier than standard riot gear, with integrated life support that could probably keep fingers warm after a hand got shot off. Miller floated, one hand on a strap in the airlock, and flexed his fingers, watching the shark skin pattern of the knuckle joints. It didn't feel like enough.
"All right, Alex," Holden said. "We're in place. Have the Rosi knock for us."
A deep, rumbling vibration shook them. Naomi put a hand against the airlock's curved wall to steady herself. Amos shifted forward to take point, a reactionless automatic rifle in his hands. When he bent his neck, Miller could hear the vertebrae cracking through his radio. It was the only way he could have heard it. They were already in vacuum.
"Okay, Captain," Alex said. "I've got a seal. The standard security override isn't working, so give me a second to..."
"Problem?" Holden said.
"Got it. I've got it. We have a connection," Alex said. Then, a moment later, "It doesn't look like there's much to breathe over there."
"Anything?" Holden asked.
"Nope, hard vacuum," Alex said. "Both her locked doors are open."
"All right, folks," Holden said. "Keep an eye on your air supply. Let's go." Miller took a long breath. The external airlock went from soft red to soft green. Holden slid it open and Amos launched forward, the captain just behind him. Miller gestured to Naomi with a nod. "Ladies first." The connecting gantry was reinforced, ready to deflect enemy lasers or slow down slugs. Amos landed on the other ship as the hatch to the Rosinante closed behind them. Miller had a moment's vertigo, the ship before them suddenly clicking from ahead to down in his perception, as if they were falling into something. "You all right?" Naomi asked. Miller nodded, and Amos passed into the other ship's hatch. One by one, they went in. The ship was dead. The lights coming off their environment suits played over the soft, almost streamlined curves of the bulkheads, the cushioned walls, the gray suit lockers. One locker was bent out of shape, like someone or something had forced its way out from within. Amos pushed off slow. Under normal circumstances, hard vacuum would have been assurance enough that nothing was about to jump out at them. Right now, Miller figured it was only even money.
"Whole place is shut down," Holden said. "
Might be backups in the engine room," Amos said. So, the ass end of the ship from here, Holden said.
Pretty much.
Let's be careful, Holden said.
I'm heading up to ops, Naomi said. If there's anything running off battery, I can...
No, you aren't, Holden said. We aren't splitting up the group until we know what we're looking at. Stay together.
Amos moved down, sinking into the darkness. Holden pushed off after him. Miller followed. He couldn't tell from Naomi's body language whether she was annoyed or relieved. The galley was empty, but signs of struggle showed here and there. A chair with a bent leg. A long, jagged scratch down the wall where something sharp had flaked the paint. Two bullet holes set high along one bulkhead where a shot had gone wide. Miller put a hand out, grabbed one of the tables, and swung slowly.
Miller, Holden said, are you coming?
Look at this, Miller said. The dark spill was the color of amber, flaky and shining like glass in his flashlight beam. Holden hovered closer.
Zombie vomit? Holden said.
Think so.
Well, I guess we're on the right ship. For some value of right.
The crew quarters hung silent and empty. They went through each of them, but there were no personal markings, no terminals, no pictures, no clues to the names of the men and women who had lived and breathed and presumably died on the ship. Even the captain's cabin was indicated only by a slightly larger bunk and the face of a locked safe. There was a massive central compartment as high and wide as the hull of the Rosinante. The darkness dominated by 12 huge cylinders encrusted with narrow catwalks and scaffolds. Miller saw Naomi's expression harden.
What are they? Miller asked.
Torpedo tubes, she said.
Torpedo tubes? He said. Jesus Christ, how many are they packing, 1 million?
12, she said. Just 12.
Capital ship busters, Amos said. Built to pretty much kill whatever you're aiming at with the first shot.
Something like the Doniger? Miller asked.
Holden looked back at him, the glow of his heads-up display lighting his features.
Or the Canterbury, he said.
The four of them passed between the wide black tubes in silence. In the machine and fabrication shops, the signs of violence were more pronounced. There was blood on the floor and walls, along with wide swaths of the glassy gold resin that had once been vomit. A uniform lay in a ball. The cloth had been wadded and soaked in something before the cold of space had frozen it. Habits formed from years of walking through crime scenes put a dozen small things in place. The pattern of scratches on the floor and lift doors. The spatter of blood and vomit. The footprints. They all told the story.
They're in engineering, Miller said.
Who? Holden said.
The crew. Whoever was on the ship.
All except that one, he said, gesturing at half a footprint that led toward the lift.
You see how her footprints are over the top of everything else?
And there, where she stepped in that blood, it was already dry, flaked instead of smearing.
How do you know it was a girl? Holden asked.
Because it was Julie, Miller said.
Well, whoever's in there, they've been sucking vacuum for a long time, Amos said. Want to go see?
No one said yes, but they all floated forward. The hatch stood open. If the darkness beyond it seemed more solid, more ominous, more personal than the rest of the dead ship had, it was only Miller's imagination playing tricks. He hesitated, trying to summon up the image of Julie, but she wouldn't come. Floating into the engineering deck was like swimming into a cave. Miller saw the other flashlights playing over walls and panels, looking for live controls, or else controls that could come alive. He aimed his own beam into the body of the room, the dark swallowing it.
We got batteries, Captain, Amos said.
And looks like the reactor got shut down. Intentional.
Think you can get it back up?
Want to run some diagnostics, Amos said. There could be a reason they shut it off.
and I don't want to find out the hard way.
Good point.
But I can at least get us some... Come on, you bastard. All around the deck, blue-white lights flared up. The sudden brilliance blinded Miller for a half-second. His vision returned with a sense of growing confusion. Naomi gasped, and Holden yelped. Something in the back of Miller's own mind started to shriek, and he forced it into silence. It was just a crime scene. They were only bodies. Except, they weren't. The reactor stood before him, quiescent and dead. All around it, a layer of human flesh. He could pick out arms, hands with fingers splayed so wide they hurt to look at. The long snake of a spine curved, ribs fanning out like the legs of some perverse insect. He tried to make what he was seeing make sense. He'd seen men eviscerated before. He knew that the long, ropey swirl to the left of the thing were intestines. He could see where the small bowel widened to become a colon. The familiar shape of a skull looked out at him. But then, among the familiar anatomy of death and dismemberment, there were other things. Nautilus spirals, wide swaths of soft black filament, a pale expanse of something that might have been skin cut by a dozen gill-like vents, a half-formed limb that looked equally like an insect and a fetus, without being either one. The frozen, dead flesh surrounded the reactor like the skin of an orange. The crew of the stealth ship. Maybe of the Scopuli as well. All but Julie.
Yeah, Amos said. This could take a little longer than I was thinking, Cap.
It's okay, Holden said. His voice on the radio sounded shaky. You don't have to.
It's no trouble. As long as none of that freaky shit broke the containment, reactors should boot up just fine.
You don't mind being around it? Holden said.
Honest, Captain, I'm not thinking about it. Give me 20 minutes. I'll tell you if we got power or if we have to patch a line over from the Rossi.
Okay, Holden said. And then again, his voice more solid. Okay, but don't touch any of that.
Wasn't going to, Amos said.
They floated back out through the hatch, Holden and Naomi and Miller coming last. Is that? Naomi said, then coughed and started again. Is that what's happening on Eros?
Probably, Miller said.
Amos, Holden said, do you have enough battery power to light up the computers?
There was a pause.
Miller took a deep breath, the plastic and ozone scent of the suit's air system filling his nose.
I think so, Amos said dubiously. But if we can get the reactor up first,
bring up the computers.
You're the captain, Captain, Amos said. Have it to you in 5.
In silence, they floated up, back to the airlock, and passed it to the operations deck. Miller hung back, watching the way Holden's trajectory kept him near Naomi and then away from her. Protective and head-shy both, Miller thought. Bad combination. Julie was waiting in the airlock. Not at first, of course. Miller slid back into the space, his mind churning through everything he'd seen just like it was a case. A normal case. His gaze drifted toward the broken locker. There was no suit in it. For a moment, he was back on Eros, in the apartment where Julie had died. There had been an environment suit there. And then Julie was there with him, pushing her way out of the locker.
What were you doing there? He thought.
No brig, he said.
What? Holden said. I just noticed, Miller said. Ship's got no brig. They aren't built to carry prisoners.
Holden made a low, agreeing grunt.
Makes you wonder what they were planning to do with the crew of the Scopuli, Naomi said.
The tone of her voice meant she didn't wonder at all.
I don't think they were, Miller said slowly.
This whole thing. They were improvising.
Improvising? Naomi said.
Ship was carrying an infectious something or other without enough containment to contain it. Taking on prisoners without a brig to hold them in. They were making this up as they went along.
Or they had to hurry, Holden said. Something happened that made them hurry. But what they did on Eros must have taken months to arrange, maybe years. So maybe something happened at the last minute.
Be interesting to know what, Miller said. Compared to the rest of the ship, the ops deck looked peaceful, normal. The computers had finished their diagnostics, screens glowing placidly. Naomi went to one, holding the back of the chair with one hand so the gentle touch of her fingers against the screen wouldn't push her backward.
I'll do what I can here, she said. You can check the bridge.
There was a pause that carried weight.
I'll be fine, Naomi said.
All right, I know you'll... Come on, Miller.
Miller let the captain float ahead into the bridge. The screens there were spooling through diagnostics so standard Miller recognized them. It was a wider space than he'd imagined, with five stations with crash couches customized for other people's bodies. Holden strapped in at one. Miller took a slow turn around the deck. Nothing seemed out of place here. No blood, no broken chairs or torn padding. When it happened, the fight had been down near the reactor. He wasn't sure yet what that meant. He sat at what, under a standard layout, would have been the security station and opened a private channel to Holden.
Anything you're looking for in particular?
Briefings, overviews, Holden said shortly. Whatever's useful. You?
See if I can get into the internal monitors.
Hoping to find what Julie found, Miller said. The security assumed that anyone sitting at the console had access to the low-level feeds. It still took half an hour to parse the command structure and query interface. Once Miller had that down, it wasn't hard. The timestamp on the log listed the feed as the day the scopuli had gone missing. The security camera in the airlock bay showed the crew, belters most of them, being escorted in. Their captors were in armor, with faceplates lowered. Miller wondered if they'd meant to keep their identities secret. That would almost have suggested they were planning to keep the crew alive. Or maybe they were just wary of some last-minute resistance. The crew of the scopuli weren't wearing environmental suits or armor. A couple of them weren't even wearing uniforms. But Julie was. It was strange, watching her move. With a sense of dislocation, Miller realized that he'd never actually seen her in motion. All the pictures he'd had in his file back on Ceres had been stills. Now, here she was, floating with her chosen compatriots, her hair back out of her eyes, her jaw clamped. She looked very small, surrounded by her crew and the man in armor. The little rich girl who'd turned her back on wealth and status to be with the downtrodden belt. The girl who'd told her mother to sell the Razorback, the ship she'd loved, rather than give in to emotional blackmail. In motion, she looked a little different from the imaginary version he'd built of her. The way she pulled her shoulders back, the habit of reaching her toes toward the floor even in null G. But the basic image was the same. He felt like he was filling in the blanks with the new details, rather than reimagining the woman. The guard said something. The security feed's audio was playing to vacuum, and the scopuli crew looked aghast. Then, hesitantly, the captain started taking his uniform off. They were stripping the prisoners. Miller shook his head.
Bad plan.
What? Holden said.
Nothing, sorry.
Julie wasn't moving. One of the guards moved toward her, his legs braced on the wall. Julie, who'd lived through being raped, maybe, or something as bad. Who'd studied jiu-jitsu to feel safe afterward. Maybe they thought she was just being modest. Maybe they were afraid she was hiding a weapon under her clothes.
Either way, they tried to force the point. One of the guards pushed her, and she latched onto his arm like her life depended on it. Miller winced when he saw the man's elbow bend the wrong way, but he also smiled. "That's my girl," he thought. "Give him hell." And she did. For almost 40 seconds, the airlock bay was a battleground. Even some of the cowed Scopuli crew tried to join in, but then Julie didn't see a thick-shouldered man launch from behind her. Miller felt it when the gauntleted hand hammered Julie's temple. She wasn't out, but she was groggy. The men with guns stripped her with a cold efficiency, and when there were no weapons or comm devices, they handed her a jumpsuit and shoved her in a locker. The others they led down into the ship. Miller matched timestamps and switched feeds. The prisoners were taken to the galley, then bound to the tables. One of the guards spent a minute or so talking, but with his faceplate down. The only clues Miller had to the content of the sermon were the reactions of the crew. Wide-eyed disbelief, confusion, outrage, and fear. The guard could have been saying anything. Miller started skipping. A few hours, then a few more. The ship was under thrust, the prisoners actually sitting at the tables instead of floating near them. He flipped to other parts of the ship. Julie's locker was still closed. If he hadn't known better, he'd have assumed she was dead. He skipped ahead. 132 hours later, the crew of the Scopuli grew a pair. Miller saw it in their bodies even before the violence started. He'd seen holding cells rise up before, and the prisoners had the same sullen but excited look. The feed showed the stretch of wall where he'd seen the bullet holes. They weren't there yet. They would be. A man came into the picture with a tray of food rations. "Here it comes," Miller thought. The fight was short and brutal. The prisoners didn't stand a chance. Miller watched as they hauled one of them, a sandy-haired man, to the airlock and spaced him. The others were put in heavy restraints. Some wept, some screamed. Miller skipped ahead. It had to be in there someplace. The moment when it, whatever it was, got loose. But either it had happened in some unmonitored crew quarters, or it had been there from the beginning. Almost exactly 160 hours after Julie had gone into the locker, a man in a white jumper, eyes glassy and stance unsure, lurched out of the crew quarters and vomited on one of the guards.
"Fuck!"
Amos shouted. Miller was out of his chair before he knew what had happened. Holden was up too. "Amos," Holden said, "talk to me."
"Hold on," Amos said. "Yeah, it's okay, Captain. It's just these fuckers stripped off a bunch of the reactor shielding. We've got her up, but I sucked down a few more rads than I'd have picked."
"Get back to the Rossi," Holden said. Miller steadied himself against a wall, pushing back down toward the control stations.
"No offense, sir, but it ain't like I'm about to start pissing blood or anything fun like that," Amos said. "I got surprised more than anything. I start feeling itchy, I'll head back over. But I can get some atmosphere for us by working out of the machine shop if you give me a few more minutes."
Miller watched Holden's face as the man struggled. He could make it an order. He could leave it be.
"Okay, Amos, but you start getting lightheaded or anything, I mean anything, and you get over to the sick bay."
"Aye, aye," Amos said.
"Alex, keep an eye on Amos's biomed feed from over there. Give us a heads up if you see a problem," Holden said on the general channel.
"Roger,"
came Alex's lazy drawl.
"You find anything?"
Holden asked Miller on their private channel.
"Nothing unexpected," Miller said. "You?"
"Yeah, actually, take a look."
Miller pushed himself to the screen Holden had been working. Holden pulled himself back into the station and started pulling up feeds.
"I was thinking that someone had to go last," Holden said. "I mean, there had to be someone who was the least sick when whatever it was got loose. So I went through the directory to see what activity was going on before the system went dead."
And?
There's a whole bunch of activity that looks like it happened a couple of days before the system shut down, and then nothing for 2 solid days. And then, a little spike. A lot of accessed files and system diagnostics. Then someone hacked the override codes to blow atmosphere.
It was Julie, then.
That's what I was thinking, Holden said. But one of the feeds she accessed was... Shit, where is it? It was right... Oh, here. Watch this. The screen blinked, controls dropping to standby, and a high-res emblem, green and gold, came up. The corporate logo of Protogen, with a slogan Miller hadn't seen before. First, fastest, furthest.
What's the timestamp on the file? Miller asked.
The original was created about 2 years ago, Holden said. This copy was burned 8 months ago. The emblem faded, and a pleasant-faced man sitting at a desk took its place. He had dark hair with just a scattering of gray at the temples, and lips that seemed used to smiling. He nodded at the camera. The smile didn't reach his eyes, which were as empty as a shark's. Sociopath, Miller thought. The man's lips began moving soundlessly. Holden said, "Shit," and hit a switch to have the audio transmitted to their suits. He rewound the video feed and started it over. "Mr. Dresden," the man said, "I would like to thank you and the members of the board for taking the time to review this information. Your support, both financial and otherwise, has been absolutely essential to the incredible discoveries we've seen on this project. While my team has been point man, as it were, Protogen's tireless commitment to the advancement of science has made our work possible. Gentlemen, I will be frank. The Phoebe protomolecule has exceeded all our expectations. I believe it represents a genuinely game-changing technological breakthrough. I know that these kinds of corporate presentations are prone to hyperbole. Please understand that I have thought about this carefully and chosen my words. Protogen can become the most important and powerful entity in the history of the human race. But it will require initiative, ambition, and bold action."
"He's talking about killing people," Miller said.
"You've seen this already?" Holden said. Miller shook his head. The feed changed. The man faded out, and an animation took his place. A graphic representation of the solar system. Orbits marked in wide swaths of color showed the plane of the ecliptic. The virtual camera swirled out from the inner planets where Mr. Dresden and board members presumably were, and out toward the gas giants. "For those of you on the board unfamiliar with the project, 8 years ago the first manned landing was made on Phoebe," the sociopath said. The animation zoomed in toward Saturn. Rings and planet flying past in a triumph of graphic design over accuracy. A small ice moon, the assumption was that Phoebe would eventually be mined for water, much like the rings themselves. The Martian government commissioned a scientific survey more out of a sense of bureaucratic completeness than from expectation of economic gain. Core samples were taken, and when silicate anomalies raised flags, Protogen was approached as co-sponsor of a long-term research facility. The moon itself, Phoebe, filled the frame, turning slowly to show all sides like a prostitute at a cheap brothel. It was a crater-marked lump, indistinguishable from 1,000 other asteroids and planetesimals Miller had seen. Given Phoebe's extra-elliptical orbit, the sociopath went on, one theory has been that it was a body that originated in the Kuiper Belt and had been captured by Saturn when it happened to pass through the solar system. The existence of complex silicon structures within the interior ice, along with suggestions of impact-resistant structures within the architecture of the body itself, have forced us to reevaluate this. Using analyses proprietary to Protogen and not yet shared with the Martian team, we have determined beyond any credible doubt
that what you are seeing now is not a naturally formed planetesimal, but a weapon. Specifically, a weapon designed to carry its payload through the depths of interplanetary space and deliver it safely onto Earth 2 1/3 billion years ago, when life itself was in its earliest stages. And the payload, gentlemen, is this. The display clicked to a graphic that Miller couldn't quite parse. It looked like the medical text of a virus, but with wide, looping structures that were at once beautiful and improbable. The protomolecule first caught our interest for its ability to maintain its primary structure in a wide variety of conditions through secondary and tertiary changes. It also showed an affinity for carbon and silicon structures. Its activity suggested it was not in itself a living thing, but a set of free-floating instructions designed to adapt to and guide other replicating systems. Animal experiments suggest that its effects are not exclusive to simple replicators, but are, in fact, scalable. Animal tests, Miller said. What, they dumped it on a cat? The initial implication of this, this sociopath went on, is that a larger biosphere exists, of which our solar system is only a part, and that the protomolecule is an artifact of that environment. That alone, I think you must agree, would revolutionize human understanding of the universe. Let me assure you, it's small beer. If accidents of orbital mechanics had not captured Phoebe, life as we know it would not presently exist. But something else would. The earliest cellular life on Earth would have been hijacked, reprogrammed along lines contained within the structure of the protomolecule. The sociopath reappeared. For the first time, smile lines appeared around his eyes, like a parody of themselves. Miller felt a visceral hatred growing in his gut, and knew himself well enough to recognize it for what it was. Fear.